Hello, welcome to the Comic Con Story. Sorry about the delay. We've had a very couple busy weeks. We are doing a circle back, and we're going to talk about the list of manga to first time. Well, not first time, but somewhat novice manga reader JT going into a deep dive on some of our manga recommendations. Of course, know my co-host JT from Saskatoon.
I'm a guinea pig.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What up?
All right, so let's start with a little bit of a strange one here. A sports manga, Hajime no Ippo, a boxing manga. JT, what did you think of the first couple of volumes you read?
I like the story.
Okay.
One thing I'm going to say, I really did enjoy the art. That's really what drew me in. Now I'm looking at the wiki here. Is the writer of Hajime, is he also the artist, or is that somebody?
Most manga creators are a double threat. They are the writer and the artist.
So George Morikawa, I really enjoy his character design, his attention to detail. Two things that kind of bothered me, and it's not a deal breaker or anything. It's just becoming from the world of, traditional comic books and mostly superhero comics therein. Is it Ippo?
Uh-huh.
Just how he's always run, like he's like Proto Deku from My Hero. Like, he always looks like he's 5 seconds away from, like, crying or shitting himself. Like, the dude's sweating buckets in practically every panel. I don't know why, that just kind of bugged me. Again, not a deal breaker. And the thing, I love the story and about him training and wanting to learn every aspect of boxing to the point that he's well on his way to kind of becoming unbeatable. Like, you see how his boxing coach is, like, constantly impressed how he's teaching him this one thing, but then he kind of extrapolates it and is able to kind of, not predict, but he kind of works out how other techniques might work in regards to a specific problem. And I really enjoyed that. It's Morikawa's art. What bothers me is being it more of a reality, more of a realistic manga than others that I read in this first go around. I think it's just with the motion and everything. This was the one that was most of a chore for me to read, because, looking at the details and, like, the jabs and the swings and everything like that. And I didn't really click what was bothering me till, on a lark, I looked up Hajime no Ippo on YouTube and I watched a little bit of the first couple episodes. And I think it's because it's such a physical story with all this movement, all this punching, at least for my eyes in this first go around, it was a little more difficult for me to kind of take it in and follow the action, because there's so much in one panel on any given page, almost hard for me to follow what's going on. But overall, I really did enjoy it, and definitely going to go back to this one. I don't know how quickly, but it's definitely on the I'll get back to this. So sorry, you go
ahead. Okay. Which characters really struck a chord with you?
Well, Ippo did come, I did come to enjoy, because I've always enjoyed stories with this underdog, and he's like this kind of perpetual underdog. And the buddy of his that, like, takes him to the gym, kind of saves him from getting beat up in the first...
Takamura.
Yeah. Takamura, definitely, because he's got that, not the rival, but, like, the brutish best friend sidekick that you see in a lot of anime and, I guess, manga, that he might, for now, he's more skilled than Ippo, but he's kind of like a big booster for him. He's always cheering him on and, like, look, you got to smarten the fuck up and you got to do it like this. And I did love that bit with him, I'll get you into the training, but you have to do the leaf, the 10 leaves trick.
Mm.
And I didn't really get, like, why he was having Ippo do that, and I kind of got at the same time reading that Ippo did that, he was teaching him how to jab. You know, the short, explosive little punches like that, and I thought that was a really cool trick. You know, it's not enough to describe how to do it, throw a jab. It's not enough to tell somebody with words how the jab works. It's that practical application. You know, get him like this is like then he understands, and you know that's another brick in the wall that Ippo's building, or you know, it's another cornerstone of boxing. He learns every little bit. Every time he learns something new, you know, it's like a little triumph.
Mm.
So, but overall, and I did enjoy the story, and I got up to the end of the second volume where Ippo has this rematch. It's supposed to be just a sparring session.
Mm.
And it goes from being a sparring session with this character, I think it's
Miata. Yes.
Miata, who's this boxing prodigy, and he's like that almost aristocratic type of rival that you meet in a lot of stories like this. And it goes from being a sparring session to Rocky goddamn Five. Well, Rocky Four, because Rocky Five was really just that street fight. And it just becomes like bigger and bigger, and there's guys from like the boxing press there, and everyone's like so impressed with Ippo and like how his skills have progressed, because he's only been training for I think like 3 or 4 months by the time this rematch happens. And it's all you get into, it's not like I'm gonna see you in a rematch and it's 3 months later, like you see the training that Ippo goes into. So I think overall the best thing about this story was the attention to detail in the context of how boxers train and how a newbie boxer, you know, gets in and starts learning and such like that. So I thought that was like, honestly, that was my favorite thing about it, is the detail like that.
Mm.
So have you read this one at all, Red?
No. I haven't read all of it, though.
Well, yeah. It's an undertaking. We're over 1,000 chapters. We're at almost 1,400 chapters. This is an undertaking unlike anything we've ever seen. I mean, I think One Piece is the only other manga I know of that rivals this in chapters.
Yeah,
JoJo. Oh, JoJo, yes.
Yeah. I'm looking at original run. It started in October of 89, and it's still going to this day. And as of this recording, there's 132 volumes collected of the story.
Yes.
Which comes out of a weekly Shonen magazine, which I think is going to come up a lot in talking about these mangas that I'm reading. But, Hajime no Ippo is definitely one I enjoyed. That second one I read was Bastard.
Okay.
Love the art. Love the story, specifically how it got really meta after the first few chapters. And like the whole idea of Dark Schneider, which every time I say that name in my head, I think of that douche from One Day at a Time. Which is really the only reference. Well, him and Rob Schneider.
He's named after D. Schneider.
I'm an idiot because I did not get that.
Almost everything in that comic is a reference to heavy metal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dark Schneider. I mean, I got Metallicana. I was like, gee, I wonder what inspired that name. But again, this. I don't know if you specifically mentioned it in the last episode, Ben, but I know you talked about it off mic. Is like the Bastard is like those paintings he used to see on the side of like Chevy vans in the 80s. You know, that's definitely like a tack that I kind of thought of going in here. And I mean, I love the story of Dark Schneider was like this bastard of a sorcerer warrior who was killed, and his soul was like, they say reincarnate in this manga, like they knew what they were talking about with reincarnation. It's, but essentially his soul was sealed inside the soul of this young boy who his parents had died, and then he's raised in the same house as this warrior priest and his daughter. And the whole idea that Schneider can be released like the goddamn Hulk, but only after a virgin recites a specific spell and gives him a kiss. And that's, it's not that that gave me, it's just something about the art that, you know, it's this whole tsundere thing with the virgin priestess. Oh God, what was her name? Tia, who's in love with, what's the kid's name that Schneider was reincarnated into?
Luce.
Yeah, Luce. And she's got this whole tsundere thing with him, which I kind of, that's on my checklist of things I like in anime and now manga, is the tsundere, you know, smacking around her hero like that. And then after, you know, Schneider comes out, he always pops, when Luce transforms into Schneider, he's always bare-ass naked. And that didn't bother me, but at the same time, I was like, is this really necessary? I mean, every time. But that's kind of like the Hulk always is wearing purple pants, so, you know, I just went with it.
Big stretch.
Yeah. But, you know, he shows up, he goes out, and he's like, well, fuck you guys. And because Luce's, like, his and Luce's souls are, like, so entangled that, you know, he's like, fuck you guys, I'm going home. And then it takes, like, sad puppy eyes from Tia, and he's like, fuck, fine. And he'll go and just start leg waste to whatever dumb bastard happens to be pissing his quote-unquote friend off this time. And so I read the first two or three volumes of this, and it just seemed like setting up, like, the trope was like, we don't need Dark Schneider, we need Dark Schneider, we don't need him, we totally need him to save our asses again. I didn't enjoy that so much, the story, the idea of Tia, like, is she in love with Luce, is she in love with Schneider, they're both one and the same. Then she gets kind of jealous when you meet the princess, who's also a virgin and therefore can just recite the spell and kiss Luce. And, you know, Schneider comes out and he's like, who the hell are you? Where's Tia? And then he'll go and he fights, like, you know, Ninja Master Gaara, who's like this former disciple of him. And he's part of the Apocalypse Riders with Schneider and a couple other guys. You know, there's always that requisite handful of evil generals who rode with the protagonist in this case, even though he's kind of an antagonist at the same time. And because I read it on, I just got to double check what the website was, on manganato.com, which is this site, just has scans of English translated manga where I read all these volumes. It's something about the art. Like, the art has got this kind of water, like, I read it in the black and white, but from looking at it, it has this kind of watercolor sort of painted feel to it. Like, there's no real heavy, like, sharp defined lines. Like, it's here and there, but it isn't like a huge mainstay when you look at art like in Hajime no Ippo and, you know, Rising of the Shield Hero, which is one of the other ones I read. So I really dug that kind of painted look to the art, but overall it didn't really hook me. So this is one I'm not certain I would go back to it.
Mm.
But I enjoyed the story. Some of the designs, like this one scene, Schneider and now all I can see is Twisted Sister in my head when I think of this manga, where he summons this golem made out of stone, and there's a couple other like big bad war vessels like that that show up. I was like, I would dig like a vinyl model of that, because they're like, it's a heavy metal manga, and like this, the whole story is metal as fuck, and some of these designs are awesome. But yeah, liked it. Not sure if I'm gonna go back to it.
Okay.
And I won't lie, I was reading this and I was like, this is kind of metal. So I found like a 80s metal playlist on YouTube and just was playing that on my headphones while I was reading, which kind of enhanced the experience. I want to save Shield Hero for last.
That's fine. So you mentioned Full Metal Alchemist. How far did you get?
I got the first three volumes of that.
Okay.
Sho Tucker should die. Well, he did die, but I'm sorry. Like, if you haven't read it or seen the anime...
You got to that. Did you stop right at that, or did you get further?
No, I read... Like, that was only in, like, the second volume on this website, so I got to the end of the third volume. It's just that story. That's when I walked away from the computer for a bit. So... If you don't know what Full Metal Alchemist is, folks, it's set in this world where alchemy, which is a science, it's not magic, exists. There are state alchemists who are, I guess they're like cops or...
They're soldiers.
Soldiers. There's Edward and Alphonse Elric, who a few years before tried to use alchemy to resurrect their dead mother, and... Alchemy in this world runs on the idea of exact, equivalent exchange. Like, you get what you give, and it has to be of equal cost in some manner. So, you can't use alchemy to raise the dead like this. Like, it's a big no-no. So, Alphonse's body literally just gets vaporized, and Edward loses his right arm and left leg, and before Ed's or Al's soul is like sucked into the ether, he crawls over to this armor and creates this like sigil with his blood on there that like binds his brother's soul to this armor. So that's why you get like this big beefy looking mother of an armored suit walking behind Ed, and it's the sound of this little kid's voice coming out of it, which...
If you're watching the anime, yes, it's a little kid's voice.
Now, yeah. One thing to point out, there are two different anime series, and the anime series has a... The first anime series has a point where it diverges from the manga, because the anime series was being adapted faster than the manga was being written. So the anime writers based... Go ahead, Red.
The writer of Full Metal Alchemist got pregnant. She couldn't fucking... For years, she couldn't make the TV... She couldn't write the manga. So it did. She gave them instructions of what she was planning.
Uh-huh.
She changed her mind later on, right, by the way. But she gave them instructions of what she was planning. So here, make your own fucking ending.
And the first series... I don't like where they went, and because they went in this whole thing about homunculi and what they are, where they came from, and it gets really dark, it gets really twisted, and it goes into World War II and Nazis and a dragon, and it goes off the rails. But the manga and the second anime, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, is much more faithful to the manga. It's almost a one-to-one. That one's better. And that one goes into things about Edward and Al's father, which has a much better conclusion. And has a much better end fight, in my opinion. Just a note go ahead, Red.
Brotherhood follows the manga. It's
almost one-to-one.
Yeah, it's almost one-to-one. It's not completely one-to-one.
Yes.
But whereas the original series, I think it's not after Show Tucker. It's
a little bit after.
After, a little bit after, then it goes its own direction.
Just a note for anyone who's listening who's like, I want to watch the anime.
Now, keep in mind, they're fans of both.
Yes.
Like, they're people who love both series.
Yes. I'm not going to invalidate
even though Ben.
Go ahead.
Like, even though Ben doesn't like the ending of the first series, doesn't mean it's not good. It's still good.
It is good, but I think that the whole thing with the Nazis and the Thule Society, it's a little out there.
That's not until the fucking TV movie.
No, it was at the very last episode. They did that shit.
Well, okay. I had heard that about Brotherhood, that, you know, it's more faithful. I've watched probably the first 5 or 6 episodes of the original anime, and I'll probably check out Brotherhood after I finish that. Overall, like, I did enjoy the story. I love the... how Ed's this little conniving little shit in a few stories, you know, like he's got no problem abusing alchemy to, you know, pay for a meal or a room, you know, and Al's like, you're not supposed to do that. And just, I love the whole brother, like the back and forth between the brothers. I think it's the first few chapters, you know, it's just the brothers dealing with these situations. They're looking for a philosopher's stone, which they believe will lessen the cost of, you know, restoring their, like, they want to restore Al's body and Ed's arm and leg and possibly try it again with further mum, who knows. I love the story where they get to this mining town that's being lorded over by this, the shit heel of a soldier who's literally just trying to climb the quote unquote corporate ladder because, you know, power and prestige. He could give a rat's ass about what his duty as a soldier is, just as long as he's better than everyone else. So I love the bit where Ed uses his alchemy to turn all this scrap metal and junk into like these fool's gold bars, all in like this kind of Byzantine scheme to like get the deed from this lieutenant and, you know, sell it to the townsfolk so they're not being bled dry by taxes and all this. Because I love how they show up and it's like, oh, tourists, hey, come over here. No, come over here. And he's like, oh, yeah, how was it for like 2 hot meals and a night's stay? 200,000. What the hell? And the story just goes from there. So when the lieutenant comes back, this is all shit. The deal's null and void. Well, it's too late. I already sold the town to these folks. So the lieutenant's just like, sorry.
So other than the brothers, who is your favorite character?
What's his name with the mustache? It's like the Escanor of this series.
Armstrong?
Yes, Armstrong, that's it. I mean, I like Mustang. It's kind of cool. A little bit of a dick, but that's cool. But no, Armstrong, I like those big, gregarious, overly emotional, kind of campy supporting characters like that. So Armstrong's pretty much my favorite. Sister and the grandma I like, too. Clearly got that whole, you know, will they or won't they? Oh, I hate you. Oh, I hate you. Bye. Sort of thing at the end where she's like, oh, she's still sleeping. She's just like waving at him with that look in her face. I was like, oh, they're going to smash. I did like the introduction of like the seven sins in these first few stories with like, it's gluttony, envy, and lust. And I do like overall, I think the thing like Hajime no Ippo, the thing I really like the most about this is the attention to detail in the character designs. It's well detailed, but it's not overwrought. I do like the inclusion of like that kind of the trope of like the wild, exaggerated eyes and when somebody's pissed off or sad, and like when Ed gets mad when anyone talks about his short height, how he gets like the fiery eyes and like his mouth just looks like this big comically jaw of like just dagger teeth like that. And again, we mentioned as we get into this, the story of Sho Tucker. I was like, I had heard of this bastard from friends who were into the anime and the manga. I knew I probably wasn't going to like him, but I didn't know what all the details were. And now that I were, it's like, this man got off way too quickly. He should have slow roasted on a spit. Should have been his punishment. For those that don't know, in the world of Full Metal Alchemist, you know, you're constantly doing research, and then like once a year you get kind of requalified for your alchemist's license. And Sho Tucker is known for working with like organic or flesh-based kind of transmutations, which is something that Ed and Al are looking into because, you know, they want to restore their bodies. And he's got this really cute dog and this faithful little dog. And then the boys leave and Sho is shitting himself because tomorrow he's wasted all this time. It's like he's trying to cram for a test the night before and nothing is sinking in. Ben, do you want to tell them what he does? Because this made me uncomfortable.
No, absolutely okay, not. This is awful.
He pulled... the biggest shit heel move in the history of shit heel moves that I've read in manga this far, which granted isn't a lot. And he created a talking chimera out of his dog and his daughter. And this shit can't be undone. And literally the only way to save this girl is to, you know, relieve her of her agony. And I was just like, I got up from my computer and I walked away for a bit because I was like, I did not expect all sunshine and rainbows in this story, but that's not cool, man. That is legitimately one of the hardest things I ever read. And that's saying something because in some of those bastard stories with Dark Schneider, it's like, okay, does this go from being like a heavy metal manga to some sort of like etchy comic? Because I think they were getting down and dirty in that, but that did make me, and given that Tia, like, I have no idea how old Tia is, like, if she's definitely not of a consenting age, and that didn't make me as uncomfortable as reading this bit with Sho Tucker in the second volume. But of all the three that thus far that we've talked about, I think this one, it had some of the strongest writing. It definitely has the strongest story. And this is like, I am definitely going to keep reading this, you know, when I can in my spare time. Like I said, I want to finish watching the anime and I'll try Brotherhood when I get to it. Like, have you finished both animes, Ben, or read, or have you guys just watched one or the other?
I finished both. Well, I watched the first one originally because it was on YTV.
Wow.
And I used to watch it every night.
I finished both, yes. Like I said, I prefer Brotherhood. I think Brotherhood is stronger. Like I said, the final fight of Brotherhood is amazing. My favorite supporting character has to be Mustang. Mustang, to me, embodies a really weird kind of character archetype that is hard for me to describe. I don't know if this archetype has a name. I'm going to just call it the good old Rock kind of character. This is like a trope that I don't know has a name. It's from the line from The Simpsons where Bart always uses Rock and rock, paper, scissors because it's like good old Rock. Nothing beats Rock. Roy Mustang only uses flame because that's all he knows or has. He knows other things, but he always uses flame. But he's really fucking good at it. Like, Like, and I'm not gonna spoil anything, but he has some fucking awesome takedown with Flame Alchemy. Like, and there are times when you think people take away all his equipment, and you think, oh my god, there's no way he can get out of this. There's no way he can, like, use Flame Alchemy, but boom, there he is. He somehow was able to whip something together, and oh my god, he's frying this person. Oh my god, when is he going to stop frying this person? Oh my god, he's fucking brutalizing this person. This is fucking awesome. That's Roy Mustang, and it's awesome.
Who is your favorite supporting character, Red?
Well, the thing with Full Metal Alchemist is it has a lot of great background characters, like supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to choose one. You know, I'm a fan of Armstrong, like yourself, but I'm also a fan of Izumi Curtis.
The teacher?
Okay.
Yeah. I've got a man 100 times better than you.
And the other thing, just in the world, like, over these first three volumes, like, they very smartly, like, they give you, it's not like they're just, you know, tricking you along with, like, little nuggets here and there. Like, they give you very concise information dumps on alchemy and, you know, like, equivalent exchange and the four different types and how some people specialize in, like, you know, elemental alchemy or this, that, or the other thing. Like, I love how as you go, you kind of learn at a pretty decent pace, which I appreciate because a lot of times in such like this, even in, like, some superhero comics, it's either nothing but, like, word balloons for two pages with, you know, exposition dumps, which doesn't give you any time to process that before the next big thing happens, which is what I like here, is you get some information, you're given a little bit of time to process it before then, you know, the next action beat or the next expositing of information. So I definitely recommend this one, folks. The last one I read out of this first bunch was The Rising of the Shield Hero, which seems oddly appropriate for this day and age of, you know, Me Too and such like that, because that's essentially the main thrust of the story is, to begin with, of this the main character,
Nafumi? Iwatani,
Nafumi, Lord Nafumi. So him and three other young men from, are they all from the same universe, or are they all from parallel universes? Is that ever established? Okay. These four Japanese males, because, you know, it's always Japanese males, are transported kind of isekai style into this alternate world where they're all christened, like, the heroes of the realm. And there's was it a sword hero, a spirit hero. What's the third weapon?
Archer.
I think it's an archer.
Yeah. Like a bow or a crossbow hero, something like that. And then you have Nafumi, who's the shield hero, and they have this big thing where there's all these people, like, you know, other adventurers and, you know, clerics and hangers-on, and, you know, various characters you would meet in any role-playing game. You know, okay, who wants to go with the shield hero? Nobody. Okay, how about you? No. Oh, you're gonna go with the spear hero? Sure, why not? So by the end of the first chapter, the only person willing to team up with Nafumi is this princess who, because he's got, like, this large bank, because that's how these heroes roll. Like, once they get there, they get given all the support and, you know, practically an unlimited credit card, if you will. And she takes him out and gets all this armor for her, and he gets some basic stuff. And he's got this dinky little shield, which has this massive, like, if you've ever played, oh god, I think it's one of, like, one of the Final Fantasies that came after Cloud Strife. Yeah, where it has just this massive skill tree that, you know, as he accomplishes all these things, the shield, you know, unlocks, like, these new forms and these new you know, forms and skills, and, you know, he can't really fight because he's just the shield hero. So, you know, his first creature he bites are like these bitey little balloon type creatures that he willingly walks out into the weeds, and like four or five of them will just like latch onto him, and then he'll like cast them out at some guy that's giving him attitude. So he's hooking up. Or not hooking up, but he's gone. He's getting hooked up with this princess and all this stuff. And he goes to sleep and literally is woken up by the rudest way possible, where like guards rush in and grab him and bring him before the king. And he's like, oh, I knew you were a piece of shit. And it turns out the princess has gone and accused him of rape. I was like, really? And he's like, no, come on. Like, he gives us evidence, like, you guys are just like, all she said, where's the evidence? Like, everyone just believes her. And I think it's the spear hero is like this long haired pompous asshole who just immediately steps to the head of the line. It's like, I'm gonna kill you, and you kill me, you send them back to the real world. And he's basically tossed out in his ass, and everyone in the land is just like, I heard you raped the princess. I don't think you're gonna want to shop here. You might want to go somewhere else. And he pretty much, the thing I noticed in the manga reading this is how he can't taste anything when he does get even the most meager meal, which might be like, it's like two strips of bacon and a small amount of vegetables, and he can't taste anything. And then he finds this weird little dude in a top hat and a Pringles mustache. And just, this guy is just giving creeper vibes every moment that I'm looking at the panels he's in. And he ends up buying a demi-human who's, they're like half human, half animals, and some, like, they're treated as like lower class beings or demons. And he gets this little fox girl named Raftalia, who,
raccoon girl,
I thought she was a fox. Okay, raccoon girl, Raftalia, who becomes his slave. Of course, he has no idea what the laws are in this world, so after a few chapters, he runs into the spirit hero. It's like, you have a slave? That's illegal. And he's like, what do you, I didn't know that. Like, he literally is, like I said, he's tossed out in his ass, so he has no idea how this world works at all. And he's just kind of making it up as he goes. Well, and
slavery isn't illegal. It's shunned.
Yeah. You know? Not looked upon favorably. So I love it when he has this duel, you know, he takes Raftalia away from him, and he's like, well, if you want her back, you're gonna have to, you know, beat me for it. And he does win the fight, and it's kind of really awesome how Nofumi uses the skills that he's amassed thus far, because this happens a while later, you know, and everyone's kind of built up their skill trees. And he legitimately kicks Spear Hero's ass. And then the princess uses, like, some sort of wind magic to, like, trip him up at the last minute that gives Spear Hero the win. And even after he removes, like, this slave mark that off of Raftalia, she smacks the hell out of him and starts giving everyone what for. So, like, he has never done anything mean to me. He's taken care of me. He's fed me. He's got me medicine. He's looked after me. I would never, you know, leave his side. And that's when that's what I loved about the whole no taste thing, because once he realizes that somebody does believe him, somebody believes in him, all of a sudden his sense of taste is restored.
It's not only that, like, he still sees Raftalia as the child that he first got. And it's not until she encourages him that he sees her for a woman.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, this whole world kind of operates on, like, JRPG, like, Final Fantasy, early Final Fantasy, not, like, Cloud Strife forward. Like, basic RPG, you get new skills, you get experience, you get stronger, you earn more money. And after a while of, like, looking after and caring for Raftalia and, she starts growing into a lovely young woman who's starting to crush on Lord Nofumi, and he's I don't know if it, but because I only read like the first four volumes on this, but it's either he understands that she's crushing on him or he's like, the hell is wrong with her?
Well, no, he understands, but the other thing to mention about this is it's not only the fact that Raftalia is affectionate with him, it's also the townsfolk, you know, isn't buying the princess's shit as much. Like, there's this great scene where, like, on the outskirts of the town, where now Fumi is living in the outskirts as well. He's not living with the people, but he's living alongside them. And, you know, there's a scene where the princess, I think you're around that point, where the princess is coming in and she's saying she's enacting taxes.
Oh, no, that was what that thing was with the spirit hero, because he was trying to, like, save the town from being taxed out of existence.
Yeah, and now Fumi, like, scoffs at the taxes, basically saying, you're trying to tax these people out of existence because what they don't even earn that much. And, like, all these townspeople are, like, looking around like, like, why are we listening to this princess? Like this guy knows what's going on. Like, why, like the shield hero's like he's on our side. Why are we listening to this princess bitch?
Yeah. Did you get the feel yet?
Oh yeah. No, I was getting to that. I mean, another thing that I really liked was this concept of the waves of how the heroes are brought together to deal with like this, you know, incursion from some sort of demonic plane. Which is to get back to that town that, you know, Nafumi's been hanging around with is, you know, they're just trying to rebuild after one of these attacks. And, you know, they're got to pay, it's like 50 silver pieces coming in and 50 silver pieces going out. Like, the princess is, rhymes with bunt cake. She's a complete bunt cake. And they have that scene. And then slowly he gains, you know, the at first, it's a begrudging respect of like this blacksmith who's, you know, getting him gear, and then they kind of have this weird kind of friendship. And then other, like, there's this kindly old witch who we meet when they, what do you call it, a ganpacha, like a mystery. It's like he buys this golden egg. It's like this golden Kinder Egg surprise that, you know, you raise it, you know, and eventually it will hatch, and you may or may not get a mount or some sort of beast of burden out of it. And you get this giant chicken bird like beast that
chocobo.
Yeah, it's a giant chocobo basically. I couldn't think of that name. Thank you, Ben. And was they name it Kokobo. Philo? Is it Philo or Firo or
Philo?
And you know, it's this weird kind of chicken ostrich looking thing, and then as it grows and gains experience alongside Raftalia and Nafumi, eventually goes from that to like a literal chocobo, like this chubby kind of chick looking thing. And then one day, randomly, this little girl with silver hair hug tackles Nafumi and yelling at Raftalia, "Get the hell away from him!" And it turns out that Philo can metamorphose into a young, like a human form. And kind of like Darth Schneider, when she does that, she doesn't have any clothes. So they have this wonderful little bit where they have to go on this quest to, with the kindly old witch woman to get this magic silk, which is like it's like unstable molecules for the Fantastic Four's costume. This cloth will transform with Fila when she goes from human to chocobo form.
And the spear hero, being the kind upstanding chivalrous man he is, instantly latches on to Philo in her lolly form, because of course he does.
Well, it's because Philo looks like a video game character. There's a video game called Disgaea, and there's an angel in Disgaea named Fiona, is it? I can't remember her name. But Philo looks a lot like her. Mm-hmm. And like, I think it's in the comic. It's not in the anime, but in the comic, he's like obsessed with that game, and he's like, "Oh, you have a slave that looks like her. I want that. I'm going to free her."
You beast! How dare you enslave another young woman? Like, I love and hate that character archetype of the spear hero here. Like the pompous, overbearing takes the one like the idea that he may have raped, like he takes the princess's word as God-given fact and just uses that to base. And it's like, well, you did this thing, so there's no way you're ever going to be a good person, yada yada yada. I both love and hate that kind of archetype here, but the whole idea of Philo having this lolly form, and then Reptalia, you know, she's turning, growing up into a smoking hot Betty. And then I realized that, dear God, this not only is this like, it's like half an isekai and half a harem story now.
Most isekais become harems.
Yeah, I know. I just didn't think I'd notice it like this, but I love the whole thing of Nofumi. Like, it's kind of reminiscent of that time I got reincarnated as a slime, like the whole like constantly up getting skills unlocked and upgrading, like the grind of a video game like this I've always enjoyed. So I enjoy that part of the story and how once he realized.
Hold on a second, JT, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
How far did you get in slime?
Well, I only watched like the first three episodes of slime.
Okay. We'll have to revisit that later. Go continue.
Okay, so that around the time in the read the first three volumes here, around the time that Nofumi and company realize that the townsfolk that he's like living near but not with have come to kind of care for him that little bit of respect, and they all come with ideas like, look, we'll set you up as being a traveling salesman. You know, this is your like hometown, but you can go out all across the land, and like they help him out, like they give him like this. He's got this support network now, like something he didn't have from the onset. Like Spear Hero is this, like I said, in addition to being a pompous asshole, he's literally every person in his party. Well, it's his harem because they're all like these long haired, like tee hee. Ingenue type of characters. It's like, oh, I've had so many party members. They switch out all the time. And it's like, God, I hope you die or get fucked up really bad. Like, I hate characters like that. I love the concept, but I hate those characters. And I ended it with, it was a couple of chapters after Philo gets her magic clothes, so she isn't always bare ass naked, where she turns into a lolly again.
So you didn't get to the other princess yet. Okay.
No.
Okay. You got a lot of awesome events coming up then. Okay. I'm not going to spoil anything then. There's a lot of things happening that you're going to definitely enjoy. So you definitely have some things that are coming up that you're going to definitely enjoy. There's also a couple of recommendations from the first episode that we're going to definitely remind you of off air that you're going to definitely enjoy, and I hope you'll be able to read by next week's episode for the second circle back. How would you rate our recommendations thus far, JT?
Let's say out of five. Hajime is like a solid 3.5, 4.
As a boxing fan, I'm surprised you didn't rate that as a solid 4.
Well, I'm not a huge boxing fan. It's like I said, it's the thing that kind of took me out of a little bit was the whole like great art, but being that it's such a realistically, physical sort of story, it's just, it's too much motion on the page, and like I said, it's easier to see that with the anime, but I definitely will try and get back to that.
Okay.
Full Metal, that's a solid 5.
Okay. Bastard?
What's that? Bastard? Bastard's a 3. Like, I enjoyed the story. It's just kind of the story, it's the art, and like I said, there's some kind of icky parts of the story that I'm like, that's not cool, man.
Ew, icky.
Well, Bastard is a guilty pleasure of mine, and it changes throughout the years because I've never heard of a contract like this before, but a company that he publishes the comics with lets him just publish whenever the fuck he wants. Like, he publishes a whole volume at a time. and he releases it whenever he wants. So when you look up Bastard, and it's still an ongoing series, but he hasn't released anything in like 10 years.
And not surprisingly, Rising.
The stuff you're reading right now is from the 80s, where they had very little American contact, so they're not very prudish. So yeah, it can get creepy.
Yeah. And did I mention Full Metal? That's
Yes, a solid five.
Yeah, and not surprisingly, Rising of the Shield Hero is a solid five. Like, it's okay. In case our listeners don't know, I am a pasty-faced white boy, heterosexual male. I am therefore the enemy, according to the internet. So when I say this, please know I do not mean it the way it sounds, but gotta stop believing that every time the victim points a finger and says something. Like, that's what bothered me about Rise of the Shield Hero, is just everybody in the kingdom is like coming down in Nofumi, and I was like, you weren't even there. Like, some merchant's like trying to gouge him because, well, you know, I heard what you did to the princess, and it's like,
well, that was a big thing when the anime first came out. Like, people on Twitter were mad and trying to cancel it and stuff. Like, you're always supposed to believe the victim. That was their argument.
And like I said, what I appreciate about the manga is, as time went on, like I said, in the village he lived in, like, everyone sort of started coming around, like, looking at this guy, like, hey, he gets it. He gets us. And this princess did nothing for us. Well, he gets it. And like you said, they help him. They support him. Because all the other heroes during the waves, they make a mess. They bugger off. And, like, they leave these monster parts and guts lying around, rotting around. They don't clean up their mess. He stays behind. He cleans up the mess.
Yeah, and that's something else I noticed, too, that I kind of enjoyed, like, the righteous indignation of Nofumi is, like, how he's constantly dealing with, you know, the aftermath of all their bullshit. And they don't, like, they're all literally just living, like, they can't leave this world unless, like, all four of them die. So they're literally just treating this like it's just a video game.
And he's treating it like the stuff that happens matters.
Yeah, like, they're trying, like, this is our lives now. Like, it's obviously operating on video game logic, but we still have to give this, like, some serious considerations. But, yeah, no, it's a solid 5 out of 5. I think the anime is available on Netflix. I might actually just, when we're done here, I might start watching that tonight.
Okay.
But I know we'll talk about it off air. Like, I got to get into One Punch Man, which, well, again, is another.
Brotherhood's available on Netflix.
Ooh, there you go. But yeah, it's, I really enjoyed, like, even like I said, Bastard, aside from the AO parts, it's like there's the whole meta sense in that, and some of, like, you know, crude and dark humor, you know, like the fuck fine parts of the story, like, when I in my head, Dark Schneider's voice is done by Curtis Arnott, the guy who did Alucard in the Helsing Abridge series. Like, that's the voice. He would have the perfect take on that.
And you would hate his fucking the voice actor who did his voice in the animated series.
I'm probably going to have to check that out just to see what you're talking about, Red. But yeah.
You've watched Fairly Odd Parents?
Oh, God.
Oh, God, indeed.
The guy who does the green fairy?
Mm-hmm. Cosmo?
Cosmo, yeah. That's the voice of Dark Schneider.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh. But anyways, I think this is a good point to wrap up part one of our circle back. Next week we'll do a part two. This year's Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Good night.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.